Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Sunday night, and we are still living in a world in which Dan Snyder has agreed in principle to sell the Washington Commanders to a group led by Josh Harris. There's other rumors that are out there. I will address them briefly here in a moment, but let me just say on the podcast today, first, we have two guests. First up, from the player perspective, the alumni perspective, Fred Smoot joins us. Fred Smoot, we discuss his view of the Snyder era. He was one of the early, on one of the very early teams. We went through the good, the bad, his view of moving forward, and also got into, because look, Fred Smoot is driving the bandwagon for Red Wolves. We had to ask what he thinks about possibly rebranding the name. In addition to that, my guy Tariq El Bashir, who of course is the Capitals insider for The Athletic, but Tariq used to be on the Commanders beat, or when it was a different name at that point. He also, like myself, grew up in this area. So we caught up, what do we think about the Snyder era coming to an end? Where do things go from here? And speaking of rebranding, Tariq and I did a story for The Athletic in 2021 before the Commanders name was picked about the process. It was a really detailed story, so we revisited that to discuss what we think, if it makes sense to start over with a name. And for you Caps fans, I did ask Tariq about the coaching change there and where the Capitals kind of go from here to get better. So we'll get to all that in a moment here on the Standing Room Only podcast, which of course you can find on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you do your podcasting. If you're not a subscriber yet, hit that button, subscribe, so you won't miss any of the podcasts. And I should say we had a really great week last week as well. The great David Aldridge joined me. Seth Emerson, who covers Georgia and the SEC, joined me to talk about the draft. We had a lot to dive into last week. Now, also make sure you subscribe to The Athletic. I did my story last week about top priorities for the new ownership group, and we had tons of contributions kick in last week, because obviously this is pretty seismic news. I do just want to quickly address some of these rumors that are out there. Now, first off, as a reminder, Snyder and Harris have agreed in principle to a deal for $6.05 billion. There are a lot of steps we still have to get through, primarily the NFL Finance Committee having to vet a signed agreement. But we're not there yet because the agreement is not signed. And, you know, until one is, I'm not going to go too crazy. But, and say, done deal, nothing to see here. We'll see what happens. But, you know, it seems like we're heading in that direction. The deal is non-exclusive, though, as we reported the other day, which means that somebody else could come in now and usurp Harris's situation. Now, here's the thing. We have two groups mentioned. One is the group led by, with Steve Apostolopoulos, the Canadian billionaire, who, like Harris, his group had a bid roughly in the $6 billion range. I have spoken with somebody who believes that group still is, thinks they're still alive. I don't really know if I buy that myself. It's just not, you know, I've talked about this a lot. It has just never quite felt right that this was going to be a potentially winning bid. And then you have this other weird scenario. Brian Davis, the former Duke college basketball player, supposedly is fronting a bid that will pay $7 billion, will pay all $7 billion within a week of the agreement being approved, that it will be an all-cash offer. This deal makes no sense on many, many levels. There's no, unless the people who track net worth have just missed the fact that Brian Davis is a human being, he does not have anything close to this kind of money. I mean, I wouldn't knock anybody who has $3 million, $5 million, $10 million. Whatever he has seemingly is more in that range than in the billions. Furthermore, if somebody is going to put up a bid for $7 billion or whatever, this is a business, but this is one of the biggest ego plays that any of these rich guys can make. They want to be front and center. They're kings of the universe when you own one of these teams. And so to not be putting yourself out front, if we were to take this thing for serious, the question would be what kind of person or entity would be willing to do that? Because again, the front person would need to be needs to put up the most money. And as I said, Brian Davis doesn't have that. The only thing I can kind of come up with that makes any sense would be if we're talking about like Saudi Arabia, some group from that country, seeing as how they've been investing big time in sports around the globe. That's the only thing that makes any sense. But again, I really don't buy this story. But look, well, we're going to play everything out. You know, we play all to switch sports. We play all nine innings. So I'm not assuming anything, but that one, just if I'm reading it right now, it just reads very, very, very far-fetched, and it's just hard to fathom that that's a real scenario. So the Josh Harris focus, Josh Harris is where we maintain our focus. Again, we have a bunch of articles on The Athletic you can read about who Josh Harris is and what might be coming down the line should he take over and once he were to take over. All right, so we'll put a cabinet there for now. There will be NFL draft talk this week, I promise. It just feels right now that, you know, the ownership is the biggest deal. We all get it. So we'll see what news comes Monday and Tuesday, and we'll get back to some normalcy, hopefully, with the NFL draft later this week. All right, but that is it for now. Let's get to these conversations. We'll start with Fred Smoot, then we'll get to Tariq El-Bashir, here on the Standard Groom Only podcast. All right, look, obviously we're dealing with historic times, almost sounds a bit much, but obviously it's a big deal for any team when you're changing ownership, let alone when it's one that's been as controversial as this one here, and getting the perspective of people who have been in this organization for a long time, played on this team is important, and we're going to do that right now with the great Fred Smoot is joining us. What were you doing yesterday? It feels like this is one of these days where people are going to be like, okay, what, you know, they remember where they were when some of this news came out. Where were you yesterday when this news came out?
I was driving to Starbucks to get coffee when my phone started blowing up and all the alerts and stuff like that. And maybe I'm one of these people, I'm kind of in the middle of everything because I have a lot of love for the Snyder family. They have did nothing but treat me well from the time I get here and let me live my dream. So it was one of those things where I do see where the fans coming from, but I can say this, what makes a bad owner? I think one thing is a cheap owner is a bad owner. I think we can never say, you know, the Snyders were cheap. I think where they get in trouble at was attention to detail and watching those who they employ. And being really just the eyes over everybody. But other than that, you know, it's just one of them things I always tell people, watch for what you wish for, because the years of getting football family royalty, like we'll never be the Rooneys because it won't be handed down generation to generation. It's only a couple of people with the Joneses and a couple of people that grew up in football as an owner and knows it. So whatever owner you bring in, he's going to have to learn on the job like everybody else.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the one good thing, I mean, we have no idea if Josh Harris will be a good owner in the wins and losses perspective, right? I mean, there is a track record with the Sixers and the Devils, but that doesn't automatically mean things will work out or not work out here. But at least to that end, he is not coming in a sports owner virgin. Like, he has gone through this. So yeah. at least to that extent, it should be, I would think, a relatively smooth transition. If you were given the opportunity to speak to him, and maybe you will, but you do some work for that team, you're a prominent alum. What's like the one thing you would say to him that, based on your time here, that he needs to do, whether it's on the field or off the field, or maybe one of each, to get things getting back on the right track here?
Well, first of all, off the field, I think address and conversate and address the needs of the fans. Like, if we learn one thing, The fans make everything goes around. Don't forget, when I got here in 01, you had to literally, and I'm not saying this as a joke, you had to die to get tickets. Like it was a yeah. very, it was a very hard buy and a hard buy in. Now to get the fans back into it, of course the sale of the team happens. It's similar to a restaurant. When you see a restaurant close and they say under new management, you're willing to give it another chance. All right, so that's where we at. So when you get these people butts in the seat, you got to give them some food that tastes good. You got to give them a different experience than they had at the last restaurant. So it's all about fan experience first. Second, you got to win, Ben. It's all about winning. You know, the best, when something, a situation stinks, the best deodorant is going out there and win games. And I think that has everything to do with the quarterback position. I think on the field, you make sure a dynasty that has never, even in our winning days, we never had long relationship with our winning quarterbacks. Doug was here a short time, Joe got hurt, and Mark Rippon was here a short time. So even in our glory years, we still haven't had that quarterback that's here for 10, 15 years that you know every Sunday he's going to be there. So on the field that. And the third most important thing, you got to get that stadium back to Washington, D.C., where it belongs. And hopefully, since everybody going to come running back to be a part of this thing, hopefully that happens with a smooth transition.
Yeah, it is an interesting point you made, like with regards to the quarterback, in that one of the hallmarks of the Joe Gibbs 1.0 era was that he won a Super Bowl with three different quarterbacks, which also, as you're saying, suggests that they, for whatever the reason, and it wasn't like his fault. Mm-hmm. I mean, Joe Theismann obviously suffers the catastrophic, the terrible injury. Doug Williams was at sort of the back end of his career already. Mm-hmm. And, Rippon, he stayed through the next administration, but it kind of faded off. And he was a sixth-round pick. They probably mined about all they could out of him over time, but that they never were able to sustain it. And it is always the wonder, despite everything that went on around here for the last two decades, if somehow they had found that quarterback, if one of these quarterbacks, Patrick Ramsey, Jason Campbell,
yes,
Dwayne, Alex Smith, Kirk Cousins, RG3, of course.
Yeah.
If one of them had stuck around for 10 years and given you that higher level, how much of the negative of the Snyder era is
would not be here? It would not be here. You bought up the main three. The big three, I think, Jason Campbell. I thought Jason had all the tools in the tool belt. I thought one thing we did to ruin Jason was offensive coordinator after offensive coordinator after offensive coordinator set him back. Of course, I think Alex Smith is a part of that three because with him, he brought stability. When he played, he brought stability, and we showed up and thought we would win. He got injured, a la Joe Theismann, and then we already know what happened with Robert Griffin III. You know, we got out to a good start. He gets injured. So it's been a little bad luck in there also.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, to an extent, of course. I mean, there is of the, Dan Snyder oversaw the whole thing. I should know this off the top of my head. What year did you get drafted?
One. Okay, I got drafted with Marty Schottenheimer. Marty drafted me here. So we should have kept Marty. That was the first thing.
Right. That's where I was going with this because people have heard me say this before. I was a fan of the team at that point. I grew up here. I was paying attention before Joe Gibbs 1.0 even showed up. I'm old. Mm-hmm. But when I quickly got concerned about Snyder, the three things I've always talked about, one, firing Marty Schottenheimer, two, mm-hmm. bringing in Jeff George when you already and paying him more money than when Brad Johnson, when you already had a guy who was a good quarterback, he obviously later wins a Super Bowl. And then three, I don't know if he's your buddy, but like when they paid Adam Archuleta to be the highest paid safety ever.
I was pissed when it happened. Like, no. That was one of those things where we were so enamored with going by other people's furniture out of their house at that time to make our house look good. We forgot to take care of our own. And that's why I love where they at right now. We have the John Allens, the Ron Paynes, the Terry McLaurin, the guys that we drafted, that we re-signed, some that we weren't good at. And then what you got to bring up in that starting in 01, we were still paying, by the time it was time to re-sign me, we were still paying Deion Sanders. We were still paying Stubblefield. We were still paying guys that hadn't played for Jeff George. We were still paying those guys.
Yeah, for sure. And so those were the three things. I always call them the unholy trinity that really kind of made me put my emotions aside, and I was no longer willing to commit the way you do as a fan. And then soon thereafter, I got into this business and I lost all emotion anyway. But you mentioned also the Deion Sanders thing. That was the other thing I thought that was the biggest mistake was, look, the Joe Gibbs era had gotten, you know, the players had just got aged out, right? That was not the new thing. And North Turner, you know, whatever. It just didn't work out as a head coach. But you still had some lingering aspects. You still had Brian Mitchell. You still had Daryl Green. And I always thought, like, Deion Sanders coming in effectively X'd out both of those guys because it made Deion became the main corner, even though Daryl Green was sort of still here. And Deion was like a returner, and that meant, well, you didn't need Brian Mitchell in their head. And when those guys left, I think that was the last end of any connection to that old era and what it meant to play for this organization. Instead, you got a bunch of hired mercenaries coming in, your Deions, your Bruce Smiths, whatever. Yeah. And there was no feel, it felt like forever, of what it meant until maybe, like you said, somewhat recently when your John Allens and Terry McLaurin's have come in and started to establish something different. I always thought that was such a massive mistake.
No, it was a massive mistake because the team lost its identity. You just said it. Daryl Green, 20-year veteran in this city, I guess to him it felt like anarchy. It felt like you forgot what I did 15 years. And we know the relationship, Daryl Green and Deion, and it's more of an alpha male relationship. And, you know, I don't think they really disliked each other, but you're right. No reason to bring him in when you just drafted Champ Bailey, a future Hall of Famer, putting him beside a future Hall of Famer. And don't forget, you got me coming a year later.
Right, absolutely. And then, of course, Champ Bailey eventually gets traded for Clinton Portis. Obviously, Clinton
Portis. Worst trade of all time. Worst trade of all time. I got no feelings in it. Both cool with both of them. I'm sorry. You don't trade a cornerback for a running back. You don't. Like, it don't equate on the field. It doesn't. Listen, I'm a big Liddell Betts fan. It ain't too much Liddell couldn't do on that field. It just that when that happened, I was like not sure of my future. If Champ can get traded, Fred Smoot can get traded.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's often been said that like Dan Snyder is playing like fantasy football owner. That trade was the epitome of that because I had Clinton Portis on my fantasy teams when he was in Denver. He won me a Super Bowl in my league one year. I had him and Priest Holmes. Nobody cared. But, like, he was great, and it felt like that's what it was. And it wasn't just, of course, straight up. They threw in a second-round pick to get the lesser-valued position.
Get the lesser-valued guy and also the guy that can't possibly play as long as the other one. The guy that can't affect as many games as the other one. A running back is only a luxury when you got a quarterback. We never had that. So why would you need that luxury? Like, we can go shut people down on defense. That's what we do until we find a quarterback. We are fine with that situation. But I just thought when you did that, it kind of shattered the guys that was here. I know a lot of us talked about it, and I was royally pissed about it. Like, I didn't like it at all.
So, I understand, like, on a personal level, the Snyders were cool with you. But when you're playing, like, it became pretty obvious to, I think, on the outside that he was playing maybe not direct GM, but like he's manipulating what's happening on the player side, bringing in Vinny Serrato, clearly his handpicked lackey, to be clear. Were you guys at that point saying, wait, what is happening here? This owner is being destructive with regards to how the football team is operating?
By far, not the first owner to put his hand and his stamp into something. I think it had more to do with Dan. He was just excited. Like, I think people forget Dan grew up dreaming to buy this team. Like, this was not overnight. And once he got it, and this is the funny part about it, and I tell people this, and I had always told Dan this, let the people know you. And what they didn't understand, Dan is very shy. He don't like the mic in his face, and he feels very comfortable around football players. Like, we can't get him to stop talking. Y'all can't get him to talk. So that's the thin line and the difference. And I said, if you just let them know you and get to know you and see that you're a flawed individual, just like the rest of us, it could temper down some of the stuff that's going on. But now you layer him quiet, him being mysterious, and then now he's a meddler. You got every reason to hate him in that situation and no reason to love him.
Just to ask, obviously we've talked about everything that's gone on over here in the last few years. As these stories, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years, kept coming out about the culture, about other aspects of this organization that led to various investigations, and you mentioned earlier that maybe one of his biggest flaws was not paying attention to who he was bringing in to do some jobs. But at any point when you're hearing all this, did you think, man, have I maybe misread this guy, or what is happening here that this is all coming out?
Well, I like to be honest, man. I don't like to be hard on nobody. I don't kick nobody while they down. That's just never who I am. That's never who I be. I just thought maybe when you got a organization this big, I'm sure a lot of CEOs, Apple and other gigantic companies, understand they can't micromanage everything. But that's why you hire good people to help you not do that. And I think a little brother-in-law ball came in there where you're hiring guys you trust that, you know, maybe that's the Vinny thing. And, you know, these are the things. And I guess if you got to say his worst hire, I don't think Vinny is the GM people point at. I don't think he's the guy that they point at. I think it's a totally different guy that everything is pointed at. And I think that's when...
You mean Bruce Allen, basically?
Yes, I was letting everybody use their imagination.
Yeah.
But I think that's when everything got to the point of no return. You know how you can do stuff. We still love you. Do stuff. It's like right then when they couldn't figure out how to get a stadium, and he was brought in here for that legit reason. When he wasn't a leader on and off the field. When he wasn't picking the guys like he should pick. Yeah, I think that changed everything, and in that lost the fan base. Like, and I think that's where everything changed. Once you lost the fan base, now we became a ticking time bomb on them.
Right. I mean, like, the RG3 thing isn't just about Dan or Bruce or anybody. RG3, you know, had his own put his own stamp on why this thing fell apart, and the injuries were obviously a huge deal.
He was his own worst enemy. Like, he had everything in his hand, and he was his own worst enemy. I said it why he was here. It was more about RG3 than it was the team, and you could tell by when they played football. You could just tell.
Right. But, like, that was at least sort of the high point of the Snyder era that first year, because of RG3 was such a sensation, and it felt like such a letdown for whatever the reason why it fell apart. But it wasn't just an isolated incident. Things had been falling apart all over the place. And then, you know, I know that, like, Kirk Cousins was polarizing for some people, but when he leaves, you know, you're starting kind of over again. And then Trent Williams, you know, he is like the one guy from 2010 on. They're like, okay, we can at least point to this guy for being a standout. Oh, wait, now he hates everybody here too. He's desperate to get out. And it felt like all those things in isolation, maybe you can survive. In totality,
you can't.
And then when the reports began to come out about the culture to that degree, I think it's like, I know personally a lot of people who moved on.
Yep.
Let me ask you this in the last couple of seconds we have here. For the new owner, you ask fans, what do you want to see from the new owner? A lot of them bring up, we want a rebrand. Even though we just went through this.
You're right about this being, I keep hearing this. I keep hearing it. I don't know if we can afford to do that now.
Well, you are the guy that was driving the bus on Red Wolves. Now, yeah. I don't think anything can happen overnight. And I would think even if they're willing to do it, it can't be the first priority. You got a lot of other things to do. But for you, if the ownership says, Fred, I know you like Red Wolves, I don't know if we'll pick that name, do you think we should change the name again? Where are you at on that?
I just feel like it's so much now. You got to realize, if we change the name again, Terry McLaurin would have been a Washington Redskin, a Washington football player, a Washington Commander, and then a Washington Wolf. Like, it'll be too much change. But I understand what you're saying. But in business mind, if I'm part of new ownership and I'm trying to recoup some money from when I buy it, The quickest way to make $1 billion is a rebrand. A rebrand that actually somebody wants. It makes you $1 billion, so it become an asset that you didn't have. All right, the only assets you get with this team are older assets. FedEx Field is an older asset. The park is an older asset. Everything else is an older asset. The only thing that you can get a print $1 billion out the air is to rebrand. I don't know if they do it. Maybe they do because it says a fresh start for everything, and I think that's how they might think. Like, let's just burn the house down and let's rebuild a new stadium, rebuild a practice facility, take a new name into the future. Yeah, I can see this group probably saying that, but realistically, I just don't know, Ben, if you can do that. What do you think? You think you can really do that?
I'm kind of with you. I just feel, and maybe this is because of my role of like covering these things, but I'm just like, oh man, again, we're going to go through this. I think ultimately, like, you know, look, the Green Bay Packers, what the hell is that? It means nothing except it's historic and it became a winning name. The Chicago Bears, this is about as generic as you can get for a mascot, but obviously they've been a historic franchise. Time can change a lot, and if they were to start winning, whether it's with Ron or somebody else, it's going to be different. You're going to feel like, oh, that name is mentioned constantly along with the Chiefs and the Cowboys or whoever it is being the front runners of the league. So I think I would give it time, but I think you're right. I get why people are saying it's not even about the name. It's just it represents something from Dan Snyder, and we'd like it all out.
And that's what it is. They could be the flying boogers of DC. If they win a championship, we're going to be there. Like, we're going to rep them. We're going to be a part of them. Winning is the ultimate deodorant. When stuff stinks, just win.
Before I let you go, you obviously, I heard you talking to John Kime the other day. Or I didn't hear it, but I know you were on there. And you were the draft is here at cornerbacks. I'll give you the pitch. We've talked a lot about that here. I haven't really talked a lot about Emmanuel Forbes, the cornerback of Mississippi State, and I can imagine why you, Mr. Famous Mississippi State, are interested, but so is Mel Kiper. He's picked him in the first round. Why do you – I don't know if you're thinking he's the best corner, but you clearly like him. Give me the pitch. Why is Emmanuel Forbes good and maybe good for this team?
All right, this is why he's good for this team. He's a three-time All-SEC cornerback. He's an oddity. And guess what? Most of the time, Mississippi State and the Washington – team has a great relationship. Sweat didn't let you down. I didn't let you down. Every time we go to that well, it's a good well. And what you want to do opposite of St. Juice is have a whole nother animal. St. Juice is more of a knock balls down, not give you catches. You need somebody that gets the ball back with this defensive line. If you want to take advantage of the defensive line, you got to go get a thief. Well, I got a thief from Mississippi that run a 4.35 flat 40. He's 6'2". He's long. The best ball skills and most fluent hips in the draft. He's and I'm not just saying this because he's a Bulldog. If he was at LSU, I would say the same. He has yellow jacket potential. All right. Behind this D-line, he has yellow jacket Hall of Fame potential. I'm all about unicorns. I'm all about people who do not fit the mold. Well, it's a reason why they good. All right. Rajon don't fit the mold. There's a lot of guys do not fit the mold in this draft. He is a part of that unicorn group, and he's a part of a group that we can actually draft at 16.
He's also 166 pounds. I mean, you played the position. Yep. That seems scary to me when you factor in that he's dealing with 300 pounders around there, that he's going to get hit by somebody.
Did it worry you when I was out there? I was only 4 pounds bigger. Did I miss games? I never miss games. Listen, he's been in the SEC at 160 pounds starting for the last 3 years and missed no games. He's been in the SEC, the closest thing to the NFL. He's missed no games. He's played against Devontae Smith. He's played against Jamar Chase. He's played against Jefferson. He's played against the NFL's best at 166. No reason to look at it now and make it a problem. It's only a problem when he starts to miss games. And don't forget this, Ben. Two things happen the day he get drafted. He's going to eat a lot of steaks, and he's going to lift a lot of weights. All right? That's what's going to happen.
Fair enough. Last question, and I've only got about a minute here before I have to run. Players play. They tend to not worry about things like ownership because it does not affect them at all. It doesn't affect them. So, but I guess my question is, they obviously, though, have been around all this for all this time. How much of a lift do you think it will be for these guys to not have to deal with the Dan Snyder era anymore, even if they were somewhat oblivious to everything that was happening?
Just to go play football. You know, I think that's what's going to be a weight off their shoulders. They don't have to worry about any outfield drama, somebody sticking a mic in their face by the name of Ben Standing, asking them about off-the-field stuff. They don't have to worry about any of that. They can just go play football and be judged, the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to football. And I think that's going to be a lot of people, you know. I think who it really affects is the people in the front office, Coach Rivera. These guys can just sit back and go do their job. Don't forget, when Coach Rivera was signed here, we asked him to do 23 jobs. We asked him to settle down our organization, get everything straight off the field, get everything straight on the field. We asked him to do so many things. Now he can focus on being a head coach.
Yeah, I mean, I do think – I mean, people ask me I just did an interview with somebody right before we started talking, and they were like, what's it going to be like for you to not have to deal with this? And I'm like, well, I mean, look, I it's hard for me to go out and do anything because it feels like any minute something will break. I don't just mean the sale, but there were points over the last couple of years where just like, oh my Lord, I can't, I got to be awake 24/7. I can't leave the house.
And then I know you just want to report football. I know you got to a point where like, damn, I just really want to talk about the team.
Right. And so, like, if I feel that way, imagine the people who are inside the building actually having to deal with it and see it and hear it. And, you walk around the halls and the tone has got to be a certain way. And, you know, and then, you know, I don't know how much the players are seeing the people who the other employees, the regular employees. But, like, you know, all those people have got to be miserable. So you're seeing that. And it's just got to be just, ugh.
Yeah, it's that thing where the situation just got overblown. It snowballed. It snowballed and it never stopped. It went from one story to two stories to now it's just nothing works over there. Like at one point, something has to work. If the stadium is the oldest stadium in football, it doesn't work. The facility, oldest facilities in football, they don't work. The football players on the field, we're not winning. They don't work. So it's like everything, some has to be a good spot.
Well, we'll see what happens. Obviously, it's not a done deal yet with Josh Harris, but certainly it looks like it's heading in that direction. So we will see, and maybe we'll see if Fred Smoot gets somehow involved, gets a big role. You already have a role with Logan Paulson breaking down a lot of tape on for the team site, but like, you know, I don't know, maybe there's a room for the mouth of the South to, you know, I don't know, assistant GM someday. I don't know.
Yeah, I love it. I love putting teams together. That's my dream job. It's not to coach. It's to be a GM. I be a scout first. I do what I like. I like to find players. And good GM, anybody can draft Chase Young. Can you draft him? Can you find a Cameron Curl? I think I'd be good at doing that.
Other than the fact that it would take you away from the airwaves and we wouldn't hear you if you're going to be a scout, I'll endorse that. Go check Fred out, of course, on the Commanders website. And always entertaining, always insightful. Fred, I really appreciate the time.
Anytime, B.
All right. As promised, joining me here on the podcast, a former member of the Washington. Well, he wasn't ever a member of the Commanders beat corps, but you know what I mean. And of course, he is our Capitals insider for The Athletic, who also, like me, grew up in this area. And therefore, the idea of Dan Snyder selling this team resonates with him in multiple ways. It is the legendary, certainly in his own mind, Tariq El-Bashir. Tariq,
what's up, Ben?
How are we doing? Are you you've got a lot going on. The Capitals have just made a coaching change, or they're moved on from the guy who's been their coach. So you've got a lot going on over there. But you know, in the grand scheme of DC sports, Dan Snyder agreeing to sell the team in principle is obviously seismic news. So you've been watching this from afar. What did you think we would actually get here?
You know, it felt like over the past year, you know, I try to keep tabs as much as I can. You know, the Commanders were the first team I fell in love with and followed as a fan growing up in Silver Spring, Maryland. So, I keep tabs. And I felt like the momentum had been gathering for a year, and once we started hearing that, you know, he had retained Dan Snyder had retained a company to look into it, and I was like, okay, we're moving in that direction. I think this is going to happen. You know, sales of this scope and size and the amount of money that's going to be changing, and I figured it was going to take a while. So I was kind of maybe a little surprised at the timeline that it seems like it's moving towards completion here in the next little bit. But I mean, if you were to like commandeer my laptop or my phone and look at the searches over the past year, there've been a lot of Commander Sale, Dan Snyder. You know, whenever I have a little bit of downtime, I was searching because, you know, like I said, it was a team I grew up cheering for, and it hasn't been very good in a long time. And, you know, for a while there, I'd been following the Ravens a little more closely. And I feel like with a change of ownership and the expected change of culture within the building in Ashburn, I feel like maybe they could get things going back in the right direction. And who knows, maybe I'll buy some tickets and go watch a game at FedEx Field.
Well, I'm sure they would welcome your patronage. When you covered the team initially, you did so for NBC Sports Washington, who had a business relationship with the organization. That's why you were, famously part of the Kirk Cousins. You like that? Yeah, sorry. How could I be blanking here? You like that? Because you're there in the bowels of the stadium after a game. With that said, so did you ever have any interaction with Snyder, or was there something you recall, some moment in time that for you sort of was a good example as to kind of all the things that were going kind of wrong behind the scenes?
Not really. I was still treated as a member of the media. Maybe, because I did stuff in the studio in the building, I was in there a little bit more than maybe like a Washington Post beat writer. But I wasn't privy to what was going on behind closed doors from a firsthand standpoint. I was, for the most part, treated like another member of the media. So I wasn't privy to everything that was going on behind closed doors. But I guess I did get maybe a little more perspective on what was going on inside the building, because I was in there going to the TV studio and other things. And the thing that struck me always, having covered pro sports now for a couple of decades, was just how important culture is. And I've already used that word once, but the culture to an organization, professionalism, it starts at the top, it trickles down, and I just always got the sense that it was a little frat boyish. Like it wasn't, the few times I went into other organizations' front offices or in their buildings, like the Ravens or other places where, I might have been for a little bit, it just felt more buttoned down and more like Fortune 500-ish. I mean, these are billion-dollar operations. I don't know, it's not a great explanation, Ben. I hope you're kind of following me. But it just felt a little more loose and maybe like more mom and popish, the NFL is this huge billion-dollar organization, and it just didn't feel like things were handled there all the time at the level of, a billion-dollar organization.
Well, and I think that makes sense, right? Because it's not like oftentimes when these new owners come in, especially now, they are heads of something. And Dan Snyder, I mean, I know Snyder Communications existed, and I don't want to be overly dismissive, but he was like so young, and that business in and of itself felt kind of, So I agree with you completely. I say this all the time. The tone of any organization starts at the top. And obviously in this case, the tone was pretty wretched throughout. So, if you're just hiring more or less sycophants to come in and do it with you, then it's not going to change unless you seek the change. And clearly he really didn't until maybe he got all the way to Ron Rivera, all these years later. Speaking of that, I'm just curious, with regards to the Caps, which is the team obviously you cover now and have covered the most. I mean, I certainly have had my criticisms of Ted Leonsis, but largely they stem from whether he's trying to win or not win. And even from a culture perspective, it's in terms of the Wizards, he gave John Wall too much freedom, and that ultimately maybe bit everybody in the butt at times. What about it from that perspective? The Capitals have obviously, this year is a disappointing year, not making the playoffs for the first time in a while, but by and large, they've been a pretty good team. How do you sort of compare those two things the way you were just sort of talking about the Commanders?
Yeah, so, you know, I covered Ted Leonsis basically from the beginning of his stewardship of the Capitals until, you know, right now. So I've kind of got a couple decades of perspective here. And, you know, early on, you know, he was younger and maybe brash and, you know, like a lot of, you know, wealthy, powerful businessmen, you know, I feel like he probably thought he knew more than maybe he did. But the key difference between Ted Leonsis and Dan Snyder, at least when it comes to running the Capitals, was Leonsis recognized, I feel like relatively early on, that, hey, maybe I don't know everything. Maybe I need to hire hockey guys who've been in the game for a long time, hire people that I trust, give the keys to them, give them the power to make decisions without my interference, and let them run it. And for the most part, that's how things have gone, I would say, you know, probably since 5 years into his ownership of the Capitals. And what you've seen is the results of allowing, you know, hiring people that you trust, hiring competent, strong people, and then letting them do their jobs with minimal interference from ownership. And, you know, I feel like that probably started with hiring George McPhee, the general manager, the previous general manager of the Capitals. And then now it's, been in Brian McClelland's hands. He, of course, made the tweaks that led them to the Stanley Cup in 2018. I'm not on the calls and in the board meetings, but it's my, as someone looking from the outside in, it looks like Leonsis, you know, while he's the owner and ultimately is consulted on the big decisions, like he'll be consulted on, you know, who replaces Peter Laviolette. He, of course, is consulted on whether you sign Alex Ovechkin to a contract extension. The big stuff, of course, comes across his desk. But I don't get the sense that he's in on every single little thing. He hired Brian McClelland, and he lets him do his job.
Well, that's certainly not something that Snyder was doing for the most point of his era. I want to talk to you about the branding, the possible rebrand in a sec, but I just thought of something. Obviously, you're an NHL guy. Josh Harris owns the Devils. I just the other day had on our 76ers reporter to discuss his view of covering a Josh Harris team and what that's like. I know you've never covered the Devils, but obviously, as based on what you've been doing, you know, paying attention to the whole league, and you do actually cover the league nationally for Turner on TV. So, and you can say no, but if you don't have any, but any thoughts on Josh Harris from that perspective in terms of things you've observed or heard over the years of him covering the Devils?
So I don't know Josh, but I will say he's got a really strong reputation within NHL circles. And again, look at the results on the ice. I mean, the Devils are one of the best teams in the league, and you know, they've been built over the last few years around a number of young, strong stars. And their window just got flung open. Like, the Devils are going to be good for a long time here. I mean, their best players are, you know, 24 years old and younger. My perception is he hires the general manager. In this case, it's Tom Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald hires the coach, and they kind of go from there. So it's my impression that that's another well-run team. And let me tell you, the Devils are going to make some noise in this year's playoffs. But they really remind me of the Capitals circa 2010, where the core of their team is in their young 20s, and they've kind of come through. They've kind of come up together. And they're about to be really good for, I would say, the next 6 to 8 years.
All right. I mean, the one thing, my biggest takeaway, obviously I follow more the Sixers more than the Devils, and the Sixers have had a really interesting journey over the last decade. But in general, it feels like both organizations sound normal. And compared to here, yeah. That good. It's just, we're not talking about winning titles even, just, oh, things sound functional. Okay, well, sounds
there's
like
crazy stuff going going on. There's not crazy headlines. You're exactly right. And the Devils were, you know, are a team that's got strong pedigree, you know, had won some Stanley Cups before before Harris took over. And, you know, he seems like a guy who came in, assessed what needed to be done, made some decisive choices, and now has them pointed in the right direction. And again, like, the Devils are going to be a force to be reckoned with in the Eastern Conference for years to come here. I mean, their window is just now opening.
All right, let me ask you this before I get to the Caps. You and I, way back in the summer of 2021, did a little story on The Athletic. The headline is, "Can you rename the Washington football team? Simulation shows it may be, quote, mission impossible," end quote. And we did this project where we had a marketing company help us out. We organized multiple, what do you call those?
Consultants?
No. What do you, when you bring everybody together to be like a panel?
Focus groups.
Yeah. My brain doesn't work anymore. Okay. Yeah. Focus groups. And it was a fun project. Again, the headline is Washington football team. So this is before the Commanders. And we went through this whole thing about, you know, the process and why it takes 12 to 18 months and how you can look at it and what are the different things. Ironically, Command was actually one of the names that our consultants came up with. They land on Commanders. One question I didn't ask, I don't think at that time, was what are the NFL rules for rebranding again? Because now everybody wants them to rebrand this again, another, right? Like, this is like one of the big things they want the new owners to do is change the name, because nobody seems to like Commanders, either because it's associated with Dan Snyder, it's overly generic, and obviously there's a faction that just wants, you know, was not going to like any name after Redskins, and okay, there's that. As somebody who is sort of a little bit of distance from now, where are you on this particular topic? And having gone through this exercise, like, what do you think about going through this again if they really are going to do it, to actually go through the branding process again?
I'm going to give you a really dumb answer, but I think a lot of people that I talk to kind of feel this way, because this has come up in some personal chat, some barbershop conversations. We hate the name Commanders. But I also hate the idea of changing it all over again just a few years after, you know, making a switch. I'm not sure I can deal with. I mean, people still call them by the previous name still. I mean, people are just now starting to switch over, you know, colloquially and kind of just in conversation to calling the Command. I cannot imagine them going through another rebrand. That said, Commander stinks. I do not like it. I thought it would grow on me. It has not. I don't mind the logos. I like the all black uniforms, even though that's not traditional. I thought those looked pretty sharp. That stuff doesn't bother me. Just Commanders is so generic and boring, and it doesn't do it for me. But I can't. I can't go through another 6 months of, you know, hearing about focus groups and, oh, they're changing this and they're changing that, and these are the five finalists, you know, these are the five names I'm thinking of. I don't know. That bothers me as well. That said, I, you know, I wonder if part of the agreement between Harris's group and the NFL is going to include some language about having the opportunity, because I know the league would not be happy about changing the name again either, but I wonder if Harris's group feels as strongly as the fans that I talk to on a daily basis feel about Commanders, because that's the game changer. That's what really matters is, you know, is it part of the agreement? Is it something that's already been discussed? Is it on the table? I mean, I'm kind of trying to put myself in Harris's shoes. You know, I'm spending $6+ billion on the team, and I know people aren't crazy about the name. I don't know. Maybe I put some language in the contract, or at least bring that up with Roger Goodell as I'm, you know, going through this process. That, hey, what would you guys think about us possibly changing the name? I don't think it would be a deal breaker, but it's something I'm sure I would want to have discussed before putting the finance, putting the papers in order.
Yeah. No, and I did see somewhere online, maybe it was John Kine, but somewhere added, like, it could be like a 5-year waiting period, but it just seems like such a weird thing, because, you know, how often does a team change their name? And I think I'm generally with you. Commanders does nothing for me, But I go, and admittedly, part of this would be as a person covering the team. It's like, oh no, not again. But yeah, I'm with you. I think also, like, look, if they were to start winning somehow, people will get over the name. But it is, yes, it is absolutely interesting to see with new business people coming in what they think, what they think about it.
Well, I mean, you know, one thing that just came to mind, I mean, what if, you know, obviously before you make a transaction of this magnitude, you've got an entire team of financial people, probably marketers coming in. What if they've already done some focus groups and those focus groups have come back to Harris and said, by the way, you're not going to make a whole lot of money on the marketing side of things with that name. No one likes it. It's very unpopular. And again, I wonder if he's already, you know, and this is just total speculation on my part, I wonder if he's already, you know, greasing the skids or at least having conversations about, hey, you know, I'm spending a lot of money on this team. That name is going to hold us back. That needs to be part of this agreement is that we are going to be allowed to change the name, even though that would probably not make the NFL happy and would probably break with protocol. I can't think of another pro team. I mean, pro teams don't change their names much at all, ever. I can't even think of another one recently other than, what, the Cleveland Indians?
Yeah.
There have been some college teams as well. But, I mean, twice in the span of just a few years, that would seem to be a bit much. It would probably weaken the NFL. In the NFL's eye, I probably would feel like it weakens their brand a little bit too. Just, you know, having a team change its name twice in just a handful of years.
Agreed. All right. While I have you here, the foremost Capitals authority in town, before I give you my highly uninformed take of the situation, give us the basics here. They change Peter Laviolette out. By the way, what timing? It sounds like that this was kind of assumed that there were going to be a parting of the ways because his contract was ending. But to announce it the day after Dan Snyder is agreed in principle to sell the Commanders, it is like the ultimate taking out the trash timing there, even if it was somewhat obvious. But what's the deal here with that?
It was also at like 5:30 on a Friday afternoon. I mean, you got to give the Capitals credit.
Yeah, they definitely timed that one nicely.
They snuck it right in there. It was my sense going into this weekend that Ryan McClellan, the general manager, was going to take his time. He was going to talk to the veteran players. He was going to talk to the assistant coaches. He was going to talk to ownership and then make a decision on whether to re-sign Peter Laviolette. It's my understanding that Peter, pretty much after the season-ending loss to the Devils on Thursday, basically said, hey, listen, let's talk Friday morning. I don't want this to linger. I don't want this to hang over my head for the next few days. Coaching changes are going to start happening around the league, and if you're not going to bring me back on terms that I'm comfortable with, let's have that conversation in the morning. So he called the meeting. They met Friday morning relatively early. They decided to part ways. And so this was as much about the Capitals wanting a different voice in the room or leaning in that direction as it was Laviolette, who is the eighth winningest coach in NHL history, 58 years old. You know, he's probably only got another, you know, kick at the can in him, maybe two. You know, he wanted to be a free agent as these jobs start to come open, so he can kind of, you know, get a jump start on finding his next destination. And there's no doubt in my mind that he'll get hired somewhere. You know, so far Anaheim is candidate's coach. Columbus is candidate's coach. Those are two teams that are young and I don't want to say rudderless, but they're not really headed in the right direction. It doesn't feel like something that good fit for Laviolette, but there are going to be other changes here in the next 2 weeks as teams, you know, that didn't make the playoffs make decisions on their head coach, and teams that get bounced quickly in the first round and maybe underachieved are going to be making changes to their head coach, to their head coaching position. So, it was as much about the Caps as it was about Laviolette. So it really was, you know, sometimes teams say, oh, we're, you know, it's a mutual parting ways when it really just was them not renewing a contract. This really was mutual. I think both sides said, okay, listen, you know, we're not sold on you. You want to get a head start on possibly going somewhere else. Let's just call it a day and go in our separate ways.
All right. I saw you have a story up on the Athletic going through some of the potential candidates, including former Cap and local guy Jeff Halpern. I'll encourage everybody to go check that out to see Tarek's views on the candidates. Here's my hot take on the Caps, and then I will let you go on here. As you know, I pay attention to what Ted Leonsis does with the Wizards, and he is constantly afraid. It seems obvious that he is just so afraid of starting over because of what that would mean for, like, not just some revenue, like you're missing out on playoff revenue, which they did this year anyway, but also, like, fans won't, like, be able to stomach it, a rebuild. I don't know. That's what it seems to be. He hasn't had an issue with that with the Capitals because they've been pretty good for the almost the entirety of the Ovechkin era, including obviously winning a cup and being a President's Trophy winner and things like that. But they are at a point now where if they were a different team, it would be seemingly obvious where you say, okay, we got to start dealing away some of these veterans and replenish the farm system and rebuild and all that kind of stuff. Except that you've got this Ovechkin deal here where he is chasing Wayne Gretzky for the all-time goal leader. And it's very cool when you see athletes these days stay with one team the entire time. But, and I'm not suggesting they should trade Ovechkin because that would cause massive upheaval, I would imagine, within the fan base. But simultaneously, you also have to keep enough people around to give Ovechkin a chance to do that. So it's not just like, you know, he's on a team with a bunch of rookies and doesn't have enough help to get there to possibly break the record. So they have to keep having like this sort of kind of a team that maybe you could like squint at and say if 23 things work, they can contend. But realistically, that's not going anywhere, which is probably why Laviolette's like, let me get out of here. There's nothing going on here. So the Capitals are stuck in this middle ground. It's different than the Wizards because there's an objective here with Ovechkin, except that, and it's a money-making objective because people will keep coming after him. But in terms of going anywhere, it feels like this is going to be a long slog to nowhere. You tell me if I'm wrong, though, because, again, I don't know about the prospects or whatever, but it doesn't seem like they got a lot of money, a lot of assets, a lot of things other than Ovechkin, and they're not going to get rid of him.
You're not wrong, Ben. You're not wrong. Look, they're going to try and execute something that's really difficult, but teams have done it, and that's rebuild the team on the fly. It's my understanding they're going to try and be very aggressive this summer in, you know, moving some fan favorites who make a lot of money. They're going to try and move away from those players and also use some of the draft capital that they acquired at the deadline to go get some younger players from teams that maybe are starting to run up against the cap. It's going to be really hard to do. It's going to be really hard to do. And you nailed it. I mean, and if we're being honest with ourselves, we always knew it was going in this direction. We always knew it was going to end this way. I mean, once they re-signed Alex Ovechkin, you knew that the commitment was to number 8, his pursuit of Wayne Gretzky, and that they were going to be an older team that was capped out and was going to have some difficulties. You know, they hoped that they were going to continue to be able to, you know, at least get into the playoffs, which, you know, the NHL is the most random of all the tournaments. I mean, things happen, you know, 7th and 8th seeds seem to get further in the NHL playoffs than they do in other leagues. But it feels to me like it was always headed in this direction. And right now, all they're really left with is kind of a Hail Mary. And it's going to be really hard to execute. But they've got a good general manager. And if they get the right coach, and let's say they're able to move on from, you know, some of these older guys who are kind of weighing on the cap, you know, like a TJ Oshie, that'd be really neat. We'll just say, just mentioning TJ Oshie potentially changing teams, you know, probably, you know, tugs at the heartstrings of Caps fans because he's meant so much to this team. Maybe, you know, Nicholas Backstrom, you know, they got to clear some cap space. So again, I mean, you painted a pretty dark picture there, and I think the Capitals are hoping against hope, maybe, that they can somehow find their way out of it. But if I'm a Caps fan, I would be bracing myself for the next 2 to 3 years being all about the OB chasing number 99 show. And eventually they're going to have to hit the reset button and just tear it down. That's not to say that they can't do what they're attempting to do. It's just, it's so hard. I mean, if you go back and you look at other teams that have kind of gone through this, you know, Chicago just got rid of Jonathan Taves and traded Patrick Kane earlier this year. The LA Kings, won a couple of cups and they've kind of been in purgatory ever since. If you're a Capitals fan, the one regret right now, as we're kind of entering this phase of uncertainty, is the Caps didn't win multiple cups. I think if they had won two cups, you could look at the fact that they were at this stage where it's just about Ovi chasing Wayne Gretzky and go, well, we won two championships. What else? I mean, this is the cycle of life in pro sports. You bring in a bunch of young stars, they win a couple of championships, they get older, then you do it all over again. The difference here is they won one cup when they probably should have won two and maybe challenged for three. And that would be the one regret if things continue to head in the direction that they're heading right now.
Well, that's a conversation for another day. I want to do like a hot take episode. And I have one about the Ovechkin era and how we're going to look back on it over time, even though he is great. But like you just said, ultimately they didn't get they haven't won enough. So that's why, this petering out feels more frustrating, perhaps, than it would be if they had put up a couple other banners.
That's fair, yeah.
All right, look, despite my dark view of this, Tark, as you can tell, is the optimistic guy, and he's going to, Ovechkin is going to be great, and they've got, sports is fun, and like Tark said, you get in the NHL playoffs, anything can happen. We'll see what the Caps do this offseason. Anything can happen. All right, go follow Tark on Twitter, at Tark, at Tark _ L Bashir. Go read him on The Athletic. And are we still making Taco Bell jokes, or are we done with that? Have you grown up?
We're done, man. I lost 35 pounds by cutting carbs, and Taco Bell's not really part of my weekly diet. I will say that every once in a while, I will have like a burrito or something when I'm on the road, and I just don't have time to go eat healthily. But it's not like before where I was kind of obsessed with it and eating it far too often.
All right. Good for you. I've fallen back on bad habits. I gotta get like you now.
Come on, Ben.
Yeah. We'll work on it. This is my off season, program. All right, man, I appreciate it. Enjoy. You got a busy off season that you're on your own here. So good luck with the coaching search. And we'll talk soon.
Anytime, Ben. Thanks for having me on.